Part 2. The Dominion of Ruin. Chapter 8. A Great Work. The barrier appeared across the nav screens of the Invincible Reason a second before the fleets fell from the warp. From his throne, the Lion saw every readout collapse into static and darkness. Every one of the Reason's senses was blinded in an instant, as if they had slammed into something impenetrable that spanned the Empyrean. That was the only warning before the ship transitioned. Colossal gravity seized the Reason. Proximity klaxons blared. The picked screens flashed and strobed as cogitators fought to process a sudden overwhelming influx of data. The ship jerked forwards, rushing despite itself towards the thing that had seized it.
"Shutters open!" the Lion shouted.
They parted over the bridge's great oculus, and he beheld what had pulled the fleets from the Empyrean. The Invincible Reason plunged towards the wall of an impossible fortress. The Lion stared at the vision, and for several seconds his mind was unable to reconcile the structure with its size. It would have inspired awe had he seen it from the cockpit of a Thunderhawk. From the bridge of a ship, it beggared belief. He looked upon twisted, spiked battlements and towers of brass and iron. They rose from a wall that stretched to port and starboard as far as the Lion could see. The wall bristled with what, from this distance, looked like thorns and claws. The glow of ugly fires shone from innumerable apertures, a galaxy of pinprick flames. Light, the colour of blood and hate, moved over the fortifications, a nebula of horror. The fortress filled the oculus, the wall dropping beyond the frame. There was nothing to see except the battlements, nothing to give the structure scale. But at last the Lion grasped its full monstrosity. The fortress spanned a system. The wall was tens of millions of miles high. It was billions of miles long. And though the proximity was lethal, it was still millions of miles away. The fleets were caught in its gravitational well. They sailed across the void before it, pulled towards a collision, minute specks of dust blown at a mountainside.
"Hard to starboard!"
Captain Stennius ordered. In his command throne, one level below the Lion's position, he leaned forwards, pulling at the mechadendrites that linked him to the Invincible Reason, as if he could lend the ship greater mobility by the actions of his body. The Lion opened a fleet-wide vox channel and heard the same command echoing and re-echoing. It was too late to attempt to reverse away from the fortress, but the ships might yet avoid disaster by taking the momentum into a turn, moving parallel to the barrier using a slingshot manoeuvre to break the wall's grip. The Lion shifted his attention back and forth between the monster growing larger in the oculus and the trajectory screens for the combined fleets. The lines were shifting slowly. The fortress was coming closer, quickly. The prow of the Reason shuddered before the Lion's gaze, mile upon mile of Gothic majesty wrenched by forces that reduced it to insignificance.
"Hails from the Red Tier and the Samothrace," said the Vox officer.
"Private channel," the Lion said.
His brothers wished to speak to him, as he had expected they would.
"Where have you brought us?" Gilliman demanded.
"I don't know, Rabute."
"Neither do I. We can't identify the system, whatever it once was."
"If this is a system, it has been moved," Sanguinius said.
"But the location is not as important as its nature. This is not the work of Horus. It cannot be the work of material hands, be they human or Xenos."
"I suppose we should be grateful for that," said Gilliman. "We should," said the Lion.
If the traitor legions had become capable of such a feat, then the war was over. He looked at the fleet trajectories again and frowned.
"Some of our smaller vessels are not turning fast enough," he said.
The port wing of the formation was ragged. It was extending closer to the fortress.
"Some of ours are struggling too," said Sanguinius. "Their engines are pushed to their limits."
"They should still complete the manoeuvre," Gilliman said.
"But they'll be very exposed."
"Then we must hope,"
Sanguinius began. Then he stopped.
The lion heard his breath catch. When the angel spoke again, it was with the tone of one caught in the grip of premonition.
"The structures between the towers," he said.
The lion turned back to the oculus. The angle of the Invincible Reason's approach had become oblique, though the fortress was so vast, its expanse stretched for an eternity into the void, glowing and pulsing with its unnatural fire. Conical shapes jutted out from the battlements at irregular intervals. They were the size of gas giants. They could not be what they appeared to be. Sanguinius confirmed the madness.
"They're war horns," he said.
His tone was flat and leaden with prophecy.
The horns blared a challenge. Across the airless void, they made their terrible warp-created sound. It travelled the millions of miles that separated the fleet from the fortress.
Perhaps the cry had come as soon as the fleets had been detected, and it was only now reaching the ships. Perhaps the horns had only sounded on the instant. The laws of reality had been suspended in this star system, and the lion knew that what mattered was not how the horns cried, but that they did. The sound smashed into the Invincible Reason, shaking the hull. It boomed through the bridge. It was deep as the heartbeat of mountains. And it was a wail, a rising, shrieking, raging wail that harrowed the soul. The lion winced. He made himself breathe through the blast. He leaned into it. On the bridge below, officers screamed, blood running from their ears and eyes. Servitors collapsed, spines ground to powder. The electrical systems of the ship surged and stuttered, blowing out picked screens, setting control stations ablaze. The thrum of the battleship's engines became a hammering roar, yet the cry of the horns sounded above everything. There was a pause, as if a behemoth of Caliban's myths were drawing a breath. And then the horn sounded again. The cry was more than sound. It cut into the port flank of the formations, culling the weak like a scythe. It pulled the Dark Angel's frigate, undaunted, and the cruiser unsheathed of the Ultramarines away from the fleets. The ships, miles long, powerful enough to turn worlds to glass, tumbled like leaves in a storm, massiveness made minuscule. The nearest horn sucked them in, hauling them away faster and faster until they were streaking at a small fraction of the speed of light towards the fortification. They crossed the event horizon of the warhorn's cone and vanished into the darkness within. There was no explosion, no flowering of ignited plasma. There was the brutal severing of communication the moment the vessels entered the cone, and that was all. The fleets continued their turn, still picking up speed, the angles of approach changing as slowly as the erosion of monuments. At last, the Invincible Reason was parallel to the wall, and then, at last, its speed became the strength it needed to pull away. The collision alarms fell silent. The Blood Angel's cruiser Excelsis did not complete the manoeuvre. The curve of its turn was too long. It came too close to the fortress and fell against it. It did scar the void with its end. It became a long streak of flame against the fortifications. The death flare was brief and barely noticeable against the infinite expanse of the wall.
"Brothers," Sanguinius said, as the combined fleets began to increase their distance from the fortress. "Can any of you return to the warp?"
"No," said Gilliman. "Warp drives are functional, but the distortion of the Materium and the Empyrean is too great here. That structure has a gravitational pull in the warp as well as here."
The lion thought about demanding that Tucholcha take the fleets back to the Immaterium. He reminded himself about the futility of giving that order. Tucholcha had warned him about the barrier. Tucholcha could not cross it.
"Then we have only one choice," he said. "We have to breach the wall. If we can't go around, we must go through."
"Our options for making such an attempt are limited," said Gilliman.
"If the options are few," Sanguinius said, "then each must be pursued with the greatest rigour."
"Do any of us think we can destroy it?" the lion asked.
"We are all agreed that we must try," said Gilliman. The greatest single naval barrage in human history occurred less than an hour later.
hulls vibrating from the strain of engines pushing back against the pull of the fortress, the formation closed to firing range with the construct. The wall filled the oculus of the Invincible Reason completely. The lion could see nothing but the iron, the brass, the flames and the thorns, resolving themselves into guns taller than Olympus Mons. The weapon systems of the Imperium powered up. When they were ready, when the synchronization of fire was arranged, when the speed of torpedoes was calculated against the immediacy of lances so that every hit would strike the wall at the same moment, then the lion, in concert with his brothers, said,
"Fire!"
Fire. The fire came to burn the void. More than 100 ships opened up with every weapon. Macro cannon batteries, ranks of lances, Nova cannons, cyclonic torpedoes, and more unleashed the anger of humanity against the obscenity before them. The raging of the ruin storm faded before the searing light of purest purging destruction. It was an act of war on a scale that had never been witnessed before. If there had been remembrances aboard any of the vessels, they would have felt compelled to record an event so monumental in song and in verse. The barrage struck the fortress, and then it did not matter that there were no remembrances. The action would not be remembered. There would be no songs. The immense became the insignificant. The explosions that erupted on the face of the battlements lit up the view in the Invincible Reason's oculus. But the lion made the mental adjustment and understood how tiny the site of the impact was in relation to the wall as a whole. It might as well have been invisible, a momentary glint on the brass.
"We aren't trying to destroy the barrier," he reminded himself. "We need to pass through it, that is all."
The flare of the blasts faded. Geysers of molten metal extended into the void. Burning gas dissipated. A crater, as wide as the fleet, appeared. It glowed from the heat of its creation.
"Our Auspex readings put the depth of the breach at approximately 4,000 miles," Gilliman said.
"Oh, it might as well be nothing at all," the lion muttered, disgusted.
The crater was a meaningless blemish on the barrier. The wall could be millions of miles thick. There was no return fire. The fleet did not even register as a threat for the things inside the fortifications.
"This is futile," Sanguinius said. "We must find another way through."
"If there is one," said Gilliman.
"A fortress is a barrier on a path," the angel insisted. "Its existence means we must cross it. This is the road we must take."
"I will not smash my fleet against this wall to no purpose," Gilliman said.
"We will cross it," Sanguinius told him. "We do not end here. I must face Horus."
Sanguinius spoke with the same certainty the lion heard in Kurz's voice. Both of them lived only partially in the present. The other part of them existed in the inexorable reality of their future deaths.
"By your logic," the lion said, "a wall must have a gate."
"Yes. This is not a blank wall. This is a fortress. We see its features. We must find the others. Our long-range scanning shows a different heat signature to port and in the direction of the wall's base."
"A base with what foundation?" Gilliman asked.
"Perhaps none. But the shape has meaning. The turrets declare that we are looking at the peak of the fortifications. Their existence implies the presence of a base, foundation or not."
"Agreed," said the lion.
"We are relaying the coordinates of the heat bloom," Sanguinius said.
A few minutes later, the fleets began to move, descending the infinite heights of the wall. The search target was as distant from the Invincible Reason as Mars was from Terra. The ship shuddered, as if it were passing through an atmosphere, straining to hold its position against the gravitational pull. Stennius looked back up at the lion as the ship passed the unending expanse of the wall, its apertures flickering with infernal red, a million eyes staring out, mocking and hungry.
"Lord,"
he said,
"what is this thing?"
"It is the future," the lion answered.
The longer he gazed at the fortress, the more the shock of its size wore off, and the more the implications of its being sank in.
"This is what the galaxy will become if we do not win this war." "Did you foresee this, Horus?" he wondered. greater powers are using you. You have opened the door to this horror. I hope we have the strength to close it.
Can we destroy this? Said Stennius.
Not this form. Our task will be to end its possibility. If we can. Father, you should have warned us.
The lion experienced a glimmer of hope when he saw the first sign that Sanguinius's theory was correct.
Rabute would congratulate you on the precision of your theoretical, he thought.
There was a gate. It came into view as the fleets travelled towards the galactic east. As far as the lion could tell, it ran the entire height of the wall. By this time, the peaks of the battlements were long out of sight. The gate extended above and below the Invincible Reason's position to the limits of perception, a universe of demonic might. The fleets increased the angle of descent, heading for the promised base. For much of the journey, the gate seemed endless, but it had a design, and so the lion knew it must end. It took a long time for him to make out the engraving in the middle of the portal. This close, it resembled a mountain chain, a topography as big as 1,000 worlds pressed together. The mountains had lines, though. They were constructed. They were art. And so they had meaning. The lion watched the portions of the design as it passed by the oculus. He held the fragmented visions in his head and assembled the pieces into a whole. It was an 8-pointed star. It was a brand upon the universe. It was a wound in reality, and it was a declaration of rule. As soon as the lion understood its contours, it seemed to look back at him, an eye more monstrous and knowing than any of the red glows in the wall. It gazed at the dust motes of the fleet, and it looked upon the lion from inside his mind. His lip curled in defiance. He focused on the progress of the Reason's journey. He promised the symbol destruction as he stared forwards.
We will hurl you from the galaxy, by whatever means necessary.
The gate and the star slid by. The pace was agonizing, though the fleet moved at full speed. The heat bloom detected by the Blood Angels became more intense and more defined in the long-range Auspex scans. At last its source became visible.
Sanguinius, the lion voxed, we have located your foundations.
The eastern hinge of the gate was anchored to a world. As it came into sight, the planet was tiny, barely an excrescence at the bottom of the wall. But the intersection of gate and planet flared with enormous energy, far more than the disparity in size would suggest. The bloom originated in the planet and travelled, spreading out a long way up the height and breadth of the gate before it faded.
So pitiful a foundation for so immense a construct, said the lion.
We have nothing to boast of, Gilliman said, angry regret breaking through. I declared the Imperium Secundus with even less of a foundation.
That is gone, said the lion. Let us bring an end to this, too.
Seconds later, the monster guns of the fortress opened fire.